Live Better and Longer with the Fitness Show, hosted by fitness expert, author, and TV personality, Fitz Kohler. She'll tell you why diets are dumb, supplements are snake oil, and the truth about how you can earn a lean, hard, pain-free, and athletic body. Now for our favorite bossy blonde, Fitz Kohler.
Hi team, I'm Fitz, your very noisy race announcer from fitness.com, and welcome to the Fitness Show. Today I have a doozy. We're going triple the noise, and I am so excited. My guests, I have Mike Riley and Rudy Novotny, which are the GOATs of race announcing, the greatest of all time. If you're not familiar with the lingo, sure, they can meh, like the best of them. But in my book, greatest race announcers ever, Mike Riley of Ironman fame and Rudy Novotny of all the big deal marathons, OC Marathon, Big Sur Marathon, Buffalo Marathon, you name it, anyone who has been intelligent, any race director who's had a brain in their head has pursued this man and said, please come make happy noise for us. So Rudy is the guy who got me into race announcing. Thank you very much. 10 years ago, he invited me to announce the OC Marathon with him. I had never done it before. And he said, I think you'd be good. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try. Just show me the ropes. And he did. And he's been a mentor since then and one of the best friends I've ever had. So Rudy, we love Rudy. And then Mike Riley, not only famous for melting hearts with his You Are an Iron Man, all the people that will run 100 and something miles, swim, step, and cycle. There you go. Spit it out just to hear him say, You Are an Iron Man. And Mike's also very special to me. He's the author of Finding My Voice, Tales from Iron Man. And when I wrote or self-published my first book, My Noisy Cancer Comeback, I went straight to Mike and he spent hours teaching me the ropes, guiding me on how to get it done right. And it's so meaningful. So again, the GOATs and two great friends I'm so lucky to have, Mr. Mike Riley and Rudy Novotny. Hi, guys.
I can't top that, Rudy.
He's too smart to even try. So thank you both for being on my show.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having us. And you know, I've given some long introductions in my day, but that was good.
Try not to be too long, try to be thorough, but really I could probably yammer on for a good 3-4 hours, just plugging your accomplishments. And I'm probably more than 3-4 hours because you guys are really the best and so meaningful to me. I love you both so much.
Well, and to be fair to Mike, you know, of course he's known as the voice of Iron Man, but Mike has called so many races, marathons, half marathons, 5Ks, 10Ks, all over the place. So he's got a long history of foot race announcing as well as, of course, his Iron Man career.
Yeah, Rudy, it's interesting when you say that because when I look back and people ask me about my career and, hey, what'd you do here? What'd you do there? Some of the fondest memories are some of the running races that I was able to work, especially for the first time, like the first race, the first LA Marathon, the first Carlsbad 5000, you know, things like that. And I can think back to them where even the race directors didn't know what they're doing. We didn't know what they're doing. Are these runners going to show up? What are we going to say to them at the finish line? And some of those memories are just priceless.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got you on that.
Well, I appreciate you guys teeing that up perfectly because, of course, we've all had such wonderful experiences race announcing and so much success. And I would probably guess to say we're batting almost 100% with our races being something we consider a success. But the focus of today's show are the bloopers, the things that have gone wrong. And I thought we'd share some of that because you've both made me laugh in stitches telling tales from the announcer stage and sometimes off of the announcer stage. And who would like to go first?
Well, Rudy, I don't know about you, but I think I did a memory block on this kind of stuff, especially if it was my mistake.
You know, thank you, Mike. Thank you. I feel better now. I know that I probably got 400 or 500, but I came up with 4.
Okay, so I'm going to ask because, Mike, in your book, Finding My Voice, you tell a tale that I was crying laughing. I was reading on the treadmill, and I'm actually one of those weirdos who can run and I read an actual book. It's my gift. But I had to get off the treadmill laughing. Do you know what I'm talking about? It was the big fall.
Well, yeah, that was part travesty, tragedy, and my, I don't know, not paying attention. It was Ironman Wisconsin, and I had just called in the female winner. And so when I do that, I go down, and I was interviewing her, and I did the interview, and somebody said, oh my gosh, the top age group male is coming. And they were always pretty close to the top females. So I said, all right. I had my notebook in my one hand. I had the microphone in the same hand. And I start climbing up the scaffold, and they had put a ladder up to the scaffold. So I'm climbing up. It's cool. And, you know, I've climbed a lot of scaffolds. Well, at the top end, the banner was wrapped around the scaffold, and there was an opening for me to go through. I grabbed where I thought the scaffold, metal was, the pole, and all I grabbed was the banner. And next thing you know, I'm going straight backwards. Oh, and there was like no recovery. And I knew, you know, it was, what was I, to the floor, 12 feet up. And, I'm going backwards, looking straight up. And it was one of those moments. I thought about my wife, my son, my daughter, and then on that fall, which was what, half a second, whatever it took to get to the ground. So how sad was it when I was going down? I'm thinking I'm not going to spend time with my grandson, because really I said, this is it. And then I hit the cement on my back. The last thing I did before I hit, from, I guess, my high school and college wrestling days, I did kind of a V up, because I don't want to hit the back of my head. That's the only thing. And so I kind of V'd up a little bit and just hit straight on my lower back, tailbone, lower back, and laid there. I was out for a little bit. And then they woke me up. They said, Mike, I go, I'm fine. You know, I rolled on my side and started wiggling my own toes and everything. I go, hey. So they stood me up, but the pain in my back was ridiculous. And so I tried to, I said, give me the damn microphone, because people were coming in. And I didn't go up on the scaffold. I said, bring my computer down here, can you? You know, so they did. Right at the finish line, I started calling people. But when I started expanding the diaphragm and everything, and oh my gosh, it was like somebody had a little machete in the back of my lower back. And I go, I think something's wrong. We better go to the hospital. So we did, and it was broken. But the bad part about that was they took me to the hospital. They checked everything. They said, you know, we don't see anything broken. Took x-rays. I got back to the race about 10 p.m. And I go, well, I can call the final 2 hours. So I walk up, and Dave Downey from BCC, who does all the sound for Ironman, goes, what are you doing? I go, because he was taking over the announcing with a couple other people. And I said, I think I can push out a couple hours. I called like three people, and the pain was so bad. And I know they had me on drugs. I go, I can't do this. I felt like a little boy. Take me home. So they took me back to the hotel room and put me to bed. I woke up about 5, 6 a.m. And I said, I got to go to the bathroom. Well, I couldn't get out of bed. The back hurts. So I crawled to the bathroom. And I said, you know what? I'm going to get in the hot shower. Crawled in the shower, turned it on, did the hot shower thing. And the pain was so intense, I couldn't get up. So they took me back to the hospital. And that's when they found out it was broken. And, you know, didn't tell any. Only a few people saw the fall, because it was on the backside of the scaffold. And right. I said, don't let anybody. So they snuck me out of there, snuck me back. But people knew, like, what the heck? Where's Riley? He called winners in, and he's not calling the age groupers in.
Right.
You know, and so, but the University of Wisconsin Medical Center took care of me and brought me back. And then the absolute worst part was flying home. I was still so drugged up. they had an escort with me, and I kind of knew who the person was. And I'm walking through the airport changing planes in Chicago from Madison. And I go, what is this dude carrying my backpack for? And I go, hey, give me my backpack. He goes, Mike, it's okay. I go, why are you carrying my backpack? I was so drugged up. Why are you? And then I get home and I'm coming down the escalator with this guy. I see Rose, my wife, and our best friend standing at the bottom of the escalator. And I always, you know, drive to the airport, park near there, do an Uber. And I looked at her and I go, what are you doing here? She goes, Al's taking you to the car. Shut up. I'll get your luggage, you know. So they got me home and I was in Kona with a back brace, 4 weeks after that.
Wow. Wow. But, well, thank goodness you're well overall. I don't want to sound like a sicko for laughing, but the way you tell it in the book, and I think because Rudy and I have been on so many treacherous scaffolding and the kind where you're climbing and you're thinking, I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't even go up. I should just refuse. Right. But you have the obligation to the people. You're like, I'm going to make it happen. And you know, your visuals, as you write of you mid air, I just was dying.
Didn't pay attention. And you know what? Those 12-foot scaffolds came down to risers at every Ironman worldwide by the next weekend. And some of the announcers call, hey, Riley, what'd you do? I don't have a good point of view. I can't see the athletes. I go, dude, figure it out. I'm sorry, but you know, I think this is the way it's going to be, you know, for the remainder of the time.
So, Rudy, you've had some scary moments on scaffolding.
Well, you know what? Let's stay with that theme. And it's actually my number one. Surf City Marathon, working with Herb Massinger, great people, beautiful race up in the beach area there. And about 2004, 2005, there I am, second story, about 12 feet. Race hasn't started, just getting my notes up, getting my book together, getting everything all kind of settled. And we had two scaffoldings right across from each other and a nice big banner. And as I'm facing away from everything happening and everybody getting corralled and kind of set, we're probably about 30, 40 minutes away from start of the event, a truck tries to go through. A large truck tries to go through between the two scaffoldings and catches the banner. And so it pulls the banner, it pulls both scaffoldings together, and then as the banner lets go, it boomerangs the scaffoldings back. I go flying from one side to the other side and then down on the scaffolding. On that level, I didn't do a Riley. I was right on top. But my race, my race director is looking up and he's freaking out. I'm down for about 2-3 minutes. He gets the paramedics up. He gets them up there. And I'm like, I'm okay. And I went through nothing like Mike did, but just kind of shaken up. And of course, he insists on me being brought down and reviewed by the paramedics. I'm just busy going, I got a race to start, man. This is not okay. I'm fine. And I actually was, and particularly with Mike's story, I think I had a scratch or two. But man, the way those both scaffoldings came together, and then as soon as that truck got past and let go of that banner, it was just fly. Everything was flying everywhere. And as soon as I get up, everybody's looking up like, you still there? It was.
Rudy, was that a race truck? Was that a truck with the event?
Race truck. Yeah, it was a race truck.
Were people like, were you like screaming? I could just imagine like yelling at the guy to stop.
They were screaming for him to stop. And he was moving through slowly. But you know, and Mike, I think he only caught like, you know, like this much of the banner. But that's all you need.
Yeah.
You know, and it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. Yeah. So, quick check from the paramedics. And I was back on the mic.
I have this slingshot in my head, like it was pulled back, you know.
That's what it was. It was a slingshot. That's the term.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
They didn't tell us race announcing it was a contact sport, but it is.
Exactly. Full contact. Exactly.
So, I thankfully haven't been launched from any scaffoldings yet, although, as you know, the structures are pretty wobbly. But I have a pretty pathetic story from the ground, from the actual ground at Savannah. It was Savannah Bridge Run in 2019, December. And it was, I was halfway through my chemotherapy. So I was still kind of a little bit of a mess. I got the little hairdo. Things are not right with me, but nothing made me feel better and made me come to life like race announcing. So having a great time at the start of that morning's 5K, and we've got a few thousand people. And because we have to go across the bridge and the finish line's across the bridge, I have to yell go from the back of a pace vehicle because they have to get me there ahead of the winners. So I'm standing in front of the speedsters, maybe about 25 yards in front of them with the microphone. And there's a hatchback pace vehicle. And the game plan is for me to yell go and then leap into the back of the hatchback and we take off. So I was still wearing my backpack. You know, we got to take all our stuff, our cowbell and our notebook and so forth. So I have the backpack on and I yell go, the runners start, and I leap backwards to put my butt into the hatchback and I slide out. So the pace vehicle starts moving and the backpack is kind of has me hooked in a little bit, but now I'm facing up towards the sky and my feet are on the ground running. And all I'm thinking is, oh my God, they're bearing down on us. The driver has no idea I'm dangling out the back of the hatch. I'm just out there trying to get my little feet to move. And like you said, Mike, you only have the short amount of time. But in my mind, I was thinking, this is going to be the most pathetic death ever. I can see the headlines just like, cancer-stricken announcer died by being trampled. I was going to get trampled by our athletes. So, you know, I'm just running my little backwards feet for my life. And thank God, probably after about 15 seconds of it, the photographer who was also in the back grabbed me and pulled me in. I've never been so grateful to be yanked around. So catch my breath. We get over the bridge. I get to the finish line where I have to run down the finish line chute to get to the microphone. And everybody thinks I won. They're all clapping for me.
That one.
Get over there. So I get on the microphone. I start welcoming the first few finishers. And some woman walks over to me. I kid you not. And she says, wow, you have so much blood on your face. And this sick little person says it with this giant smile. And I said, what? And she said, you have so much blood on your face. And I said, I used that microphone. I said, can I get medics to the finish line? And so a group of like four of them come over. And I said, is there blood on my face? And they're, oh, there is so much. So it was a small, like a 2-inch scratch next to my ear. It must have happened on the zipper of my jacket or something as I was being yanked in. But oh, that would have been the most pathetic way to die. Don't you agree?
Well, it like the running of the bulls, the running of the runners. You get trampled.
Oh my gosh. Face up. They would have stomped all over my poor face. So
plus there's so much testosterone at the beginning of those races. You got no hope. They'd be running over you.
It's over.
This is the weirdest speed bump. So what other kind of weird experiences have you guys had?
What you got, Mike?
Well, one of my toughest ones was, you know, the back thing was tough, but this was a disaster. It was Kona. I always go out on the pier and away from the scaffold, which is about 100 yards out at the end of the pier where the start line is in Kailua Bay. And I have a speaker system which shoots straight out to the start line of the swimmers and another microphone that I can talk to everybody. So I go back and forth. I talk to the swimmers, stay behind the line. And this is when we did the mass start with the pros up front. The male pros, the female pros were all kind of mixed together. Get some of the women swim as fast as the guys. And then the age groupers behind them. The 2 days before the race at the pro meeting, the swim director said, we're going to give you a warning that it's 5 minutes before the race. and I'm going to blow off an air horn. And I go right away, I go, why are we doing that? We never did that before. Well, we need to warn everybody, NBC, the helicopters, TV, and all that stuff. And I slough it off. Part of me goes, that's stupid. Well, anyway, we get to race day. I completely forget about the air horn. I didn't say anything to the swimmers or to anybody because I just forgot about it. It just seemed like a moot point. So I'm out there. I'm talking to the swimmers, the whole deal. And we always start the race with a cannon shot. And everybody hears that all over the island. And as I'm talking, this air horn goes off. And a lot of events, as you know, are started with an air horn. I've got a lot of foreign athletes out there, the whole deal. And they take off. The paddler, the paddlers weren't even ready to build the paddle line to keep them back, the whole deal. And they take off. And I'm going, whoa. Well, they can't. They're swimming in the water. They don't hear me now. And even the swimmers behind, the age groupers, were hearing me. But they weren't going to stay there. They followed, you know, the sheep. They were following the group. They didn't want to be left out. And I'm going, oh, my God, this is the biggest. And I got in one ear, the NBC people, what the hell did you start the race for? The race director, she's next to me going, what? I go, well, the air horn, I don't know. And I'm starting to panic. It's really, I was losing it. Like, I don't know. The timers hadn't even started. I mean, it was a disaster.
Oh, my God.
So all Sharon Ackles, the race director at that time, said, Mike, you got to figure this out. And so I figure it out. I look up. There was another set of paddlers about 75 yards up, 100 yards up, who were kind of waiting there. And I know they could hear me. So I said, paddlers up there, do anything you can do, because the swimmers are V-ing out now. You got your lead, you know, right. Pros. And I said, anything you can do to stop the lead swimmers. I go, grab their swimsuits, grab their goggles, grab their swim caps. Stop those lead swimmers. And they're big time surfers out there. And so they put their thumbs up and I'm thinking this ain't working. And all of a sudden I see one grab guy by his suit, one grab a guy by the cap, goggles. And the first few started stopping, like screaming at the surfers, like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing?
Exactly.
No, stop. Well, as they stopped those, everything started stopping. It was like traffic coming to a stop. And when they stopped swimming, I go, hey, everybody, it was a false start. Sorry. We false started. You know, all I could think, keep apologizing, because if I was in the water, I'd be pissed. You know, you train all your life to go. So I said, please come back. It was a false start. And everybody came back. Pros were screaming at me, you know, like, Mike, hey, take it easy. It's all right. Your day's going to be fine. And we got him back to the start line and I had the wall built. I said, okay, guys, I can only keep him here for 2 minutes. 2 minutes is all we got with them because they are livid, nervous, wasted a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And they said, we can have everything ready in a minute. And at the 1 minute mark, I said, all right, swimmers, have a great day. And the cannon went off. And I swear that was, I remember I was profusely sweating. It wasn't even that one. I was just wringing wet and they took off. And usually I'll say, don't they look great? And everything. I just sat there and I'm looking at the water like, okay, can I, you know what the thought was? Can I go home now?
Right.
That was like everything. Right, that was like over, that was like 75% of the day stress, you know, that.
Yikes.
And so finally we got them back and got them on their way. And athletes, age groupers afterwards, next day at the awards, said, Riley, I don't know how you stopped this because, man, I was pissed. I didn't want to stop. I go, hey, you know, you wouldn't have had a time, no timing back, you know.
Right.
So that was a disaster right in front of my eyes, but it came out okay.
Well, so Mike, I got to go back on your story because you knew. In your heart of hearts, and you already said it, the air horn was a bad idea to begin with.
Yeah, and it was a longtime director of the race, and he was standing right next to me the whole time. And you don't know how bad I wanted to. Yeah, you know, there's no reason to say to somebody like, you know, I told you. I mean, because it didn't. He learned his lesson, as did other people who approve that. Well, we never. If I got to the Big Island and saw an air horn, I would throw it in the garbage. I said, I never want to see an air horn on this island as long as I'm a part of the race.
We are with you. And Mike, what is the lesson learned? Bad.
You are good prop. I love that.
Oh my God. I say air horns, the least exciting, most annoying sound in racing. It's just, it's a garbage way to start a race. It's so unfun. It's so unprofessional. Got to get rid of the air horn. So one of the things I was thinking as you were talking, Mike, is that people don't really understand how much responsibility goes into the race announcer's hands. You know, at right. some point, we are in charge of the thousands of people. And there really are some necessities that, or some burdens, I should say, that we bear. And of course, we do so willfully and enthusiastically. But I think it would be helpful if more of our peers understood what we were dealing with. And when things go wrong, we're the court jester. We're the ones who have to stand up there with a red face saying, sorry, even if we didn't screw things up, we are the official apology source of everything that goes wrong. I've certainly had to apologize for other people's lack of preparation or whatever. And yeah, that's tough.
That's right. Because how hard could it be to start a race? I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that race, you know, Kona, any Ironman, especially Kona, it was 50% of my stress for the day. After that got over with, I go, okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know what you
mean. Those, because you got swimmers in the water, you got water involved, you got paddlers. And then they started doing waves, and I'd send off 8-9 waves and make sure they're right on time, because the timer started the time on that. And, you know, the time's everything for an Ironman, and as it is for any race. So, yeah, that was a big part of the day, just getting them out of there.
Holy smoke. So, Rudy, what else do you have on your list?
Man, I got to follow this guy. You know, this is freaking brutal. I guess I set it up.
Yeah, you said, go ahead, Mike.
I did. What a fool. Okay. Well, you know, as a race announcer, it's, of course, always important to honor, you know, honor via over the microphone some of the people that, you know, make things happen, and of course your sponsors. And, you know, one of the hardest working people in the whole system is the race director.
Yeah.
And you know, so there I was at the Coleman Race for the Cure, Orange County, in one of the early days, probably year 3 or 4, and that race was huge. That race was so big that one of the race directors used to impress upon me, Rudy, we've got to get these corrals out. You got to hustle everybody through, because we had so many people and we had so many corrals that it looped around and came back on itself. So if we didn't do that, we would have people waiting to start, and they would be past the finish line where the lead athletes were coming in to finish. So anyway, so, you know, you got to give the race directors their due. And I remember being up there on the microphone, and it's like, you know, folks, we got to make sure to give love to one of the hardest working people in this whole thing. She really makes this all happen. And, let's give it up for our race director, a good personal friend of mine, Kathy. And then the word loafer came out of my mouth. Of course, you, Mike, you know her, and Fitz knows who she is. And as soon as the L started coming out, it's like, no, it's Kathy Kinane. No.
Really? Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, and honestly, I remember it so well that I remember as soon as the L was coming out, I couldn't stop the rest of it from coming out. And it was like, oh, give me that
mouth.
Now, Abby wasn't anywhere around. She was around. She didn't hear that. A whole bunch of the people in front laughed. A couple of the finish line staff people kind of looked over, It's like, hey, you're not old enough to make mistakes like that.
Well, tack that on to the how many names we've all butchered. I mean, you know, we say a billion names a year and we get the great percentage of them right. But sometimes you just got to butcher a name.
You just got
to. Yes. Well, I butchered that one.
There's a great pro athlete, Michael Lovato. He's retired now. He actually does the TV broadcast for Ironman for their online shows. And I'm bringing him up on stage. He finished, he was like seventh or eighth in Kona. Big day. He had a big day. I had just gotten off the phone with my brother, Patrick, before the awards started.
I don't know why.
I brought everybody up. Instead of Michael, my name, I bring up, and now he's played Patrick Lovato, and he's coming up, and he's giving me this look like, what are you talking about? And I'm going, what's wrong with him? God, he finished. I didn't even realize I said it. And the winner, who was standing next to me, because we lined him up 10 in a row, he goes, Mike, that's Michael Lovato. I go, what'd I say? Oh, you said Patrick. This is why what'd I say? You said Patrick. I go, are you kidding me? So to this day, I mean, we kid each other. I call him up and go, hey, Patrick, what's up?
Nice.
Okay, what about anthem stories? When did the anthem go wrong?
Oh God, I got it. God bless the United States Marine Corps. And I'm announcing the Oceanside 70.3 in Oceanside, California, the home of Camp Pendleton, the largest Marine base in the States, one of the largest in the world. So they always have a anthem singer come, and the Corps showed up in the morning. I think it was a sergeant and then a corporal, and she comes up on my scaffold. I introduce myself to her, and she was, at first, my first thought was, wow, she's kind of young. She was probably, I don't know, 21, maybe 22. And I'm guessing she could have been younger. And I could tell she was nervous. I go, hey, you're going to be fine. You know, you're a Marine and you're going to get this done. And her sergeant's standing down there and he's just staring, you know, staring up. I asked him to come up and he's, no, I'll stay here. So he's just staring up and I'm doing a few more things. And finally, I said, now, in honor of all of our men and women in service of our country, and did the introduction. I introduced Corporal, I forgot her name, said her name, and handed her my mic. And she went like this. She put the mic up and nothing.
No.
And she just started looking straight ahead. Oh. I go, you okay? She goes, yeah. And she started this and nothing.
Oh.
Absolutely froze. And I looked down at this sergeant. You should have seen, he had his hands on his hips with a look that would like kill. And I go, can you do? She goes, I can't do it. And so I looked down at BCC and Dave Downey. I go, guys, you know, I did that. And they popped in an anthem. But everybody, all the athletes are lined up, looking up, about ready to get in the water at her, and it was just horrific. I felt like she was my daughter, or you know, that happened to somebody you love.
Right.
And then they started playing the anthem. We didn't have a singing. They just played an anthem. And she was holding on to the mic, and she wouldn't let go. I go, here, you need to give me the mic. So she gave me the mic, and I go, it's okay. You're gonna be okay. And she goes, oh, he's going to be so mad. I'm thinking to myself, that happened already. And she went down and they both walked away and I never knew what. And the athletes, they saw her coming down and the front athletes gave her a round of applause and hopefully it made her feel better. But it was horrific to be standing, you know, how close we are to the singer. I step back and you're like 3 feet. And I'm just staring at her going, oh, please, something come out. Nothing. Not one word. Nothing. It was, it was, It's kind of bad.
So we've had two doozies in Buffalo. One of them from one of our anthem singers in opera. Remember the opera guy, Rudy?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He gets about halfway through the song and he forgets his words. Mm. And it's also timed to the Rockets' Red Glare. Greg Weber shoots off fireworks. So this thing has to go. So he's singing and then he butchers the words and then it's so bad. And he looks over to me, he goes, "Can I restart?" And I said, "No, singing." And I start singing the proper words. And he was like, "On the Rockets' Red Glare," because of the fireworks. We had no choice. So that poor man, he didn't come back. And then, a couple of years, in fact, it was also the year that I was sick in Buffalo and we were having the Ruffalo Stampede, our dog race. And that was the only place where we didn't have a live singer and we didn't have a tent over the sound system. And so we were going to use my iPad, Leanne Rimes, for the anthem. And so I get everybody, you know, stand up, hats off, blah, blah, blah. I press Leanne Rimes. And of course I've got my hat off. So I'm bald and fabulous at the time. And I click the anthem and it says, all you hear is, "Oh, say, can you see?" And then it just falls out. It just dies. I look over at the iPad. It had overheated from being up. And so I knew it wasn't coming back up. And even though I can speak pretty well, I have the world's worst singing voice, but I just decided right there, like, I am not letting this national anthem die here. So I took the microphone and I put it up to my mouth and started singing the anthem. Oh, it was so bad. But fortunately, I gestured with my opposite hand and everybody else started singing along and I was able to remove the mic from my mouth, but it was god awful. It's actually, I mean, it's kind of a blessing and kind of a curse that there's no video, because it would be
right.
That'd be a funny one.
Rudy, any good anthem stories?
Well, I was at the San Diego 1020. It was Peter Douglas from Elite Racing.
Oh my! Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, really super fun. It was 10 miles, 20 bands, and it was along the coast. Did a real good. It was super fun. Oh, and we had one of the Eagles, one of the original Eagles, and of course I'm having a senior moment.
Not Glenn Frey.
Oh, not it wasn't Glenn Frey. No, it was one of the early guys that went on to do his own thing. As soon as I'm finished this, it'll come to my mind.
That's right.
He was phenomenal. And the band did all the Eagles. It was incredible. Anyway, in the so we've got, it was Leanne Rimes, I think. We've got Leanne Rimes going. And it's about halfway, and it just cuts out. Just done. And so I grabbed the microphone. I'm singing along in my head. And then grab the microphone and just take off and give it my best shot. And just as Fitz recounted, I was like, "Please, everybody!" And it was just a big sing along. And when we finished, it was a total hit. Not me, but just that we all came together to make it work.
And let's be clear here: you have actually sang the anthem quite a few times since then, and on request. And then we actually had I think the sound cut out at Carlsbad, and Rudy he didn't even try to fix it. He just went straight for the microphone to sing. You are a songbird.
It did cut out at the Carlsbad Marathon. That's very true. Oh, well, hey, you know, come on. We're race announcers. We jump in and do what we got to do when we got to do it. I don't think I could do this for another 30 years. Of course I can't, but if I could, never be able to do anything like Mike stopping or getting the Iron Man to stop.
Well, I've got another great anthem story. It's Iron Man, Arizona. And I was told we have a young girl coming to sing the anthem. She'll show up with her mom. And this is at the welcome ceremony. And so I got the stages set. All the athletes are sitting out there eating and the whole deal. And there's nobody. I go, "Hey, we got to start this. Let's go. It's getting late. The anthem singer hasn't showed up." And Tom Zebart, who announces with I've announced over 100 races with him. He is a beautiful singer. And I looked at Tom, I go, dude, you got to sing the anthem.
Person, come on, Z. Go, Z.
So he comes up on stage. I introduce Tom. Everybody stands up. He's singing the anthem. And I see over in the corner of my eye, side of the stage, and I see a mom and a girl, you know, maybe 15, 16 years old. And the mom's going like this to me. And I'm thinking, no way. They're late. What am I? And Tom's singing, so I'm not going to move or anything. He gets down. I go, thank you, Tom Zebart and stuff. And the woman, here, come here. And I real quick go to the side of stage. She goes, my daughter's here to sing the anthem. I go, ma'am, I'm sorry. You were late. And she goes, well, have her sing it now. And I go, we can't do two anthems. I'm in my head right away. I go, never done that. Never heard it's ever been done. Why would you do that? So I go, I'm sorry, ma'am. We already did it. And this is terrible. We came all the way in from wherever outside of Phoenix. And I go, I'm sorry. I gotta do the show here. So I went up to the podium and just started doing the show. And Tom Zebart calls me about 5-6 weeks later. He goes, hey, are you watching American Idol? I go, yeah, Rose watches it all the time. And so we watched, and it was the final episode, and we're watching the thing, and he goes, that's the young girl that that you dissed. I go, I didn't diss her. I just didn't have her sing. And he's giving me a hard time. She won. It was Jordan Sparks. She won American Idol as a 16-year-old or 17-year-old. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah, I did. So to this day, Tom always goes, hey, I beat out an American Idol when I sang the national anthem.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's wild. So she actually ran LA Marathon probably in 2018.
Yeah.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
But we didn't realize it. And she was one of our final finishers. And apparently I was down. I gave her a big hug or a high five, I was told, and had no idea it was her. I just, you know, hugging everybody down there. But yeah, good.
Well, Rudy, I got one more that's in my head, if you don't mind.
Go.
Because it's a running race. America's Finest City Half Marathon.
Oh.
I announced that for, I don't know.
Long time.
20 years. 30. Anyway, Neil Finn, the great friend and race director, that race would finish in the Prado of Balboa Park. Runners are coming. It's still, I don't have much of a spotting system. The binoculars, you know, look them up on a sheet of paper or type them in. So the race is towards the end. And I see this woman coming across the bridge towards me. And she's got this cameraman following her, like with a big like TV camera. And I don't recognize her. I go, God. And I said something like, wow. And this finisher's got her own camera with her. That's what I said. And somebody down below goes, that looks like Oprah Winfrey. I
think, whoa.
No way. First of all, Neil would tell me, and this woman didn't look like Oprah. So she comes across the finish line. Her name was Dorothy Johnson, which I found out later was two friends. Da, da, da. Anyway, I go, that's on the speaker system. I go, that's not Oprah. Oprah is much bigger than that. That's what I said, because Oprah had lost so much weight and, you know, trying to be funny. That's when I learned, don't try to be funny, Mike, because it's going to bite you in the ass. And then the scaffold starts shaking. Neil Finn, the race director, is climbing up like 90 miles an hour. He goes, Mike, it is Oprah. It's Oprah. I go, what are you kidding me? I'm announcing the race and you didn't tell me Oprah Winfrey's doing the race. Oh, yeah, she's running. She didn't want anybody to know. I go, well, you got to let me know. I just dissed Oprah, for God's sake.
Shoot.
And then I she's walking away. I go, Oprah, you look fantastic. Great finish. And she gave me a wave and a smile like, oh, my God. Okay, I think it's okay. Maybe she's not going to sue me or whatever.
Whoa.
And Oprah, that was in August, because Oprah ran the Marine Corps Marathon in October. That's the marathon. So she came to San Diego to run a incognito as Dorothy Johnson half marathon. And the race director, they never told me, you know. So
We get that too. There's been celebrities running our races, and I feel like, why would you not alert us? And then also alert us if there's a celebrity there that doesn't want to be acknowledged. It was right. Justin Turner, the LA Dodgers, who people loved. He came through the 5K a couple of years ago, wearing a hoodie, kind of just slumped over. I was like, Justin Turner, is that you? And he was like, no, don't say anything. It's like, oh, sorry, cat's out of the bag. But
yeah, I say, if you're a public figure and you go out in the public, you're public access, and especially in a running race, you know?
Right.
So be proud. I mean, you know, what the heck?
So speaking of LA, Rudy, you had something very exciting happen in 2020. Three. You want to talk about that?
Look at him.
Well, that's not on my list, in the scheme of race announcing can be a contact sport. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where were you? I don't know where you were.
I was down in the finish line shoot.
You were right. You were down doing your usual sweaty hugs. And I'm doing backup, and that works really well for us. Fitz is extremely mobile. I'm less mobile the older I get, but I don't mind that. And I'm calling people in because she doesn't have she doesn't have anything to see names and numbers and all that stuff. So I'm calling people in, and I look over on the side, and this guy's coming up on the scaffolding on the stage. And I look over and he says, you need to introduce me to everybody. No, that's not going to happen. He says, yeah, you need to do that, and you need to do it now. So I'm like, okay, once again, that's not going to happen, sir. And I start moving him over to the steps to get him down where he needs to be. And he reaches back and swings at me, and I move over to the side, and he hits the back of my head and pins me to a bar of the stage scaffolding, and I start to go over. Fortunately, I didn't go over, and I'm in shock. Like, what's going on here? He's got me in his grasp, but I've got the microphone, and I'm like, LAPD to the announcer stand, please. LAPD to the announcer stand. Oh, and by the way, just to be really clear here with the story, there's security people all down below. They're all down below. And the person that was first up that essentially tackled him was my sound guy. Let's hear it for the sound guy.
Yes. Sound guy was underneath our stage.
Underneath, right.
We had been asking those security people to take action all day. There were so many people penetrating the finish line, putting our athletes at risk, and they refused to budge. And so even when he got slugged, nothing. And so when he calls for LAPD, I look up and I see Rudy with his back up against the railing, leaning back.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So then I start yelling for LAPD. They're not coming. And it was crazy. I went running over like, I'm going to kill this guy with my microphone. I was ready to bash that man's head in with my microphone. He is so lucky. Sound guy got him ushered off the stage. And that's when the security guys came in too. But yeah, it was awful. And Rudy was so nice. He was like, well, blah, blah, blah. The cops came over, checked on him. And then they said, do you want to press charges? And Rudy said, I don't think so. And I was like, you better press charges.
Yeah, she was like, yes, he does. Yes, he does. And I'm looking over at the guy, and I'm not saying it, but I'm thinking, dude, you have no idea how lucky you were that I was up here and not her. Retired professional kickboxer, she would have kicked your ass.
Oh, my gosh. That was not cool at all, but it's a good story.
And of course, this is everything's happening, you know, people are coming in. And so, yeah, I took a few minutes off, and, you know, Fitz wanted me to be checked out by medical. I was fine. And, you know, my neck was tweaked, no big deal. And the show went on. The show must go on, as you all know.
Yeah. You know, what's so interesting is so many times when we have approached our stages, I can probably 50 times I've seen the bomb sniffing dogs at our stages checking. And sometimes in my mind, I think, huh, how tragic that they have to do that. And then some races protect me like I'm the queen. I have an official security person assigned to me. There's barricades and stuff. And sometimes I forget how necessary that is. It's a weird thing that has to be necessary to protect us. But we've had so many weirdos. And I'm sorry, you're the one who got slugged. Have you ever been slugged, Mike?
Yeah, my wife hit me this morning. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm good.
Well, have you had any irate athletes that you had to deal with on an individual basis?
Yeah, I'd have a couple come to the scaffold and start yelling up and you gotta call my daughter, you can do it, or if I miss somebody, how dare you miss my son. That was, and I just look down, sorry, and then just keep going and ignore them. I was always pretty well protected. You know, after 9/11, the first major event in the world was Kona, was the Ironman World Championship the next month. And there were snipers on the buildings, you know, and that was for about 5 to 8 years. There was a lot of security, and there's still a lot of security, but nothing like after that. But I get people yell at me, you know, you mispronounced this, you did this wrong.
Right, my favorite, you mispronounced my name.
Yeah, you know. Sorry. But it would self-correct with the crowd, because everybody knew what I was doing and who I was, and people would go, hey, get out of here, he's doing it. It would actually self-correct. I'd watch it self-correct. So that was okay. That was kind of cool. But no, I, you know, the pronunciation of names, I would always tell the athlete, they'd come up and, you know, you kind of said my name wrong. I said, did I mispronounce those four words after your name? You are an Iron Man. Oh, no. He's not
right. So some of my favorites are when locals, who apparently I've woken up, get real ornery. They're so tired and they hear my voice that they get up, they get dressed. And I've had well over a dozen people come to the finish line and curse me out, just try to rip me a new one. And I'll say, sorry, we have permits. You mother effing blah, 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 F you, I was trying to sleep. And that's usually when I get on the mic and start pouring on, wow, what a great gift to the community this event is. And we're not only getting the community fitter, but we're bringing in so many dollars to this community, all the people that are flying here and eating here and sleeping here. And you know, that's usually met with two big middle fingers, but I love it. Sorry, not sorry.
New York City, they did one Ironman in New York City. Oh my gosh. And it was just a logistical nightmare. A barge was out on the Hudson River where a boat brought the athletes out to a barge. They jumped off, swam back to someplace on the Jersey side. Anyway, at 9 o'clock, the sound guys go, Mike, there's police here saying we have to turn the volume down. I go, what are you talking about? We're on the green here. There's nothing. Well, there's apartment building on 4th Avenue. I guess a lot of very wealthy people live there. I go, don't we have a permit? And they said, no, they didn't get one passed. I go, what? So I go, okay. So they turned it down. I was talking a little softer. When they left, I go, okay, crank it up. Well, we cranked it up, and it wasn't 10 minutes later. They come back and go, you're done. They shut us down. Sound and all. No music, no nothing. Wow. Athletes are coming in. All I did was I ran down to the finish line, and I ran out to the crowd and I screamed to them, be as loud as you can. They shut our sound off. So they would scream, scream, scream. Then the athletes would look around like, all right, where the hell is Riley? Why isn't he saying that stuff to me? Aww. And I'm standing right there, and I had a list. I still, the computer was still working. I go, you know, Jimmy Brown from Tulsa. I'd look at him, Jimmy, you're an Iron Man. He'd see me like face to face. So I'd shake his hand and he'd go through. And I did everyone like that. The name, shaking their hands, and the whole deal. I woke up the next day, I couldn't move my arm.
Because
these people, when they finish, they, you know, it's their last strength in their body. I'm shaking, hugging the whole deal. But I had to call in, you know, 2.5 hours of congratulations, you're an Ironman. Yeah, that the next, my voice was done, you know, when we've got the speaker system helping us out, but I'm screaming over the applause and everything. You are an Ironman. It was, and my son was there with me. We're walking back to find a cab at, you know, 2 a.m. to get back to the hotel. He goes, that kind of sucked. I go, I know, that was bad.
Well, this is a great exercise because as we're doing this, I'm remembering other things that came up. So I've got a classic, Fitz. I don't even think you've heard this one before. It was pre your race announcing, a classic shutdown. You're done. So I'm at the LA Marathon and we're right there by the finish line. Fitz knows, you know, they used to put us out in a nice little stage area, like a, you know, 75 yards before the actual finish line. But we were like right at the finish line. I had a co-announcer. We're working together, having a great time. Everything's going well. And then I'm looking and there's a commotion down to the left of where we're at over by the finish line. And this truck pulls up and removes the generator that's providing electricity for everything.
Oh my God.
And so it turns out that the rental company had an order to pick it up at like 10:30 or 11 o'clock. And this guy wasn't hearing anything else about anything. We had people out there talking to him, trying to make, nope, I've got an order to, and there goes this monster generator on wheels. Backs the truck up, hooks the trailer up, and it's gone.
No way.
My co-announcer looks over at me and says, what do we do now? We're done. We aren't done. Oh, man. That was nuts. It was probably about, I'm guessing it was an hour before the last athletes are in, and we just went down below and as you did, just welcome people in, but no music, no. Fitz, you would have lost your mind.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Holy schmoly, that was good stuff. I just love them. I love them so much. So listen, that was only the first half of my interview with Mike and Rudy. I will very quickly publish the second half of the interview, which is possibly even better if that's a possibility, but such great stories. Already this show is as good or better than I expected it to be. My expectations were high because it's Mike and Rudy, but I've just enjoyed this. I hope you guys have enjoyed it too. And that's really the whole reason we're doing this, is so you can listen and enjoy. So do me a favor, reach out, let me know what stories you love, what you would have done in either of our situations and any of these situations. So I want to hear from you, of course. And we're going to do a song of the week right now. As per usual, always recommending a song that you might want to add to your playlist, something to get you hyped up or help you move along while you're exercising. And I asked Mike and Rudy to give me their songs. I actually asked them once we were done recording because they are busy men who had to go. But for this episode, I'm going to share Rudy Novotny's suggestion for Song of the Week, and you must add it to your playlist. It's a requirement. It is David Bowie's Heroes, which is a classic. And I said, Rudy, why do you want them to listen to this song? And he said, because he has it on his playlist. He always works out to it. I said, do you run or lift weights? And he said, yes, all of the above. I just love this song. It's a classic, and I think everybody else will enjoy it too. So download or stream or listen on YouTube, but David Bowie's Heroes. And if you haven't done so yet, folks, you are morally obligated by law. It's morals and laws. That's two very different things, but I'm going to say it. You are morally obligated by law and probably the church. I'm sure all churches believe this, but you need to follow me at Fitzness on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. And Fitzness.com has had a facelift. I would love for you to visit my website and tell me what you think. You are also required to leave a review. Again, I'm sorry, I don't make these rules, but they're the rules and you have to do it. If you haven't done so yet, follow Rudy Novotny. He's on Facebook. He's on Instagram, but he doesn't post. So you got to connect with Rudy on Facebook. But Mike Riley is on Instagram and his handle is Iron Man Voice. The other thing you should do is pick up Mike's book, Finding My Voice. It's truly outstanding. And I enjoyed reading it. There was a lot of laughing, as you heard, and then some gripping stories that had just, you know, wonderful endings. And that's what it's all about. That's what we're in this for, right? Is so we can do better and be better. And sometimes when we share our lowest and highest moments, it encourages others to reach out and do the same. So thanks for listening to the show. Thanks to Mike and Rudy. And I love you guys. Get to work.
Hi, this is Rudy Novotny, the voice of America's marathons. We all love how much running has benefited every aspect of our lives, so much so that most of us only wish we'd started sooner. Wouldn't it be wonderful to give the opportunity to children of today? Well, you can. The Morning Mile is a before-school walking and running program that gives children a chance to start each day in an active way while enjoying fun, music, and friends. That's every child, every day. It's also supported by a wonderful system of rewards, which keeps students highly motivated and frequently congratulated. Created by our favorite fitness expert, Fitz Kohler, Morning Milers across the country have run over 2 million miles and are having greater success with academics, behavior, and sports because of it. The Morning Mile is free to the child, free to the school, and is inexpensively funded by businesses or generous individuals. Help more kids get moving in the morning by visiting morningmile.com. Champion the program at your favorite school or find out more about sponsorship opportunities. That's morningmile.com. Long may you run.